This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human-animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human-animal connection.
Welcome, everyone, to the Human-Animal Connection. I'm so glad you're with us because I have Deborah Jones, and she's a PhD, a retired psychology professor who now trains animals full-time. And she's got a really interesting program. She's been doing this over 30 years, and she focuses on positive reinforcement methods. But what I'm so excited about is her work on the importance of giving animals choices when we're doing training. So we're going to really focus on that today, because animals have feelings too, right? And we need to consider their feelings and not just impose a training method on them to get some results that we think are important. So that's really great. Well, Deborah, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm very excited. If there's one thing I can talk about endlessly, it's about dogs.
Oh, good.
And dog training. Yeah. That's one thing that never gets old. As you said, I've been doing it for 30 some years, and every day it feels like I learn something new. So it's one of those things, it's like an area to me where you can never know enough.
Right.
So it keeps it interesting. And I think that you heard about me through a blog post that I wrote about animals having feelings. So certainly that must have resonated with you.
Yes.
That we're on the same wavelength a little bit when we talk about that. And one of the things that I see in the course of my career is that things are changing, and people are going from, in the beginning when I was first training, seriously training, formally training, probably in the early 90s, it was all about to get the dog to do the thing.
Right,
if I could get the dog to sit or come or stay or heel, then I was a successful dog trainer. And just at that time, there started to be this little rift where there was a small subgroup of people who were like, but I don't like the way that you have to do it. Get the things to happen, but it's not comfortable for me because it doesn't seem like my dog is having a very good time with it.
Yes.
So that to me was like the beginning of everything that came after with the more positive reinforcement movement. But even then, a lot of the times it was still on focused on the mechanics of training, not on the relationship or the interaction that you're having with the dog.
Yes.
And so that to me became something that I started to notice and focus on and realize a lot of times there was something missing. And the missing thing wasn't that the dog needed more training in their skills and behaviors. The missing thing kind of came down to this relationship.
Yes.
And the dog maybe didn't really want to be there and didn't really want to do the things they were doing, but they weren't given any options. So, choice. You know,
exactly. I mean, you know, if we do that to humans, we call it slavery, right? So, you know, why would we want to do that to our animals that we love so much? And, you know, there's a better way. And the better way is what we're really talking about today and how we can, A, notice first if a dog is not enjoying it or not, or has had enough or is just tired or whatever the reason. I guess the first step is just to notice. And then how do you introduce choice? Let's say you have something you want the dog to do, but how do you introduce choice?
I think that's a good question, and it's a big question because it's not always, choice is not always something that's clearly obvious. We have to look at those small clues and those little subtle signs that a dog might be giving us. And so one of the things that I really stress, especially now in my work, is paying such close attention to your dog's body language. Look at, they're telling us things all the time.
Right.
They are trying their hardest to communicate, and they probably think we're pretty dense because we don't get it, but we don't read it right. And even for myself, when I go back and watch training videos, I'm like, how could I have missed that? My dog clearly indicating that they weren't comfortable with something. And I'm just going along like, hey, everything's fine. And because we get the idea that because we're using cookies and toys and we're trying to be fun, that the dog will never want to opt out or be stressed. And I don't think that's really true. I think there's a lot more to it. It's a lot more nuanced than just what we're using as reinforcers. So therefore, our dogs always want to work. So knowing the dog, starting to form that relationship with them where you are paying attention so you can tell. Because every dog's different with their body language. We have the universal things that the dog puts their ears back or that they move their tail a certain way or their hackles go up. Those universal things tell me, oh, this dog is not happy to be here. If my dog tries to leave, that's a clear one. And I like that one. It's like, go ahead. So I always give my dogs the option to leave. They can always leave a training session. I will never try to coax them back into it. And in fact, I will give them cookies when they leave. It's like, if they leave, I'm going to give you a cookie scatter on the floor. And I'm going to end the session because you gave me information. You told me what we were doing was not comfortable for you at that moment.
Right,
So
right.
I don't want to punish that. I
Right.
want
And
them to keep telling me.
the next day that same thing may be perfectly comfortable. Who knows what scent was in the room or what noise or what emotional dynamic with their person could have made them get into a no mode. No, I don't want to do this.
Right, there's so many possibilities that we don't perceive. We don't feel the things that they do. And so I always feel like my dog can always tell me no. And so that's their choice to me. They can always leave a session. But I have to say I'm surprised when they do because I work very hard to make sure that they want to be doing what I'm doing. And I work very hard to keep my sessions short and to use reinforcers thoughtfully and carefully and to not push them. If I start to see those little signs that they might be getting uncomfortable, that's when I need to stop, not push them for one more repetition and one more repetition. A friend of mine calls that testing to destruction. If you just keep going, you should stop. Get one more, and that's almost always a bad choice. So letting them stop is to me kind of the ultimate choice. And I set up all my sessions so that they're free to leave. They're free to opt out of the session. I will reinforce that. We will take a break, and I will try to determine what do I need to change for next time. Maybe, as you said, the answer might be nothing. It might be it was just that day. They just weren't feeling it. They weren't feeling great. But often it's something that I can change and I do differently. So I feel like that gives me a lot of power actually, because if I can change it, then I can make the next session go better. And I can entice my dog into wanting to work with me. If they don't want to be there, it's never going to be good.
And sometimes do you sense when you're doing a training that that person is maybe a little tense or stressed or has an agenda and that
All
impacts the
the time. Yes,
not
all the
sometimes,
time.
all
All the time. Yeah,
the
it's our emotions are so tied up in it.
time.
And especially back in the days when I was showing in competition obedience, that's like the most stressful thing in the world to do. I don't even know why I put myself through it. Other than that, at that point in time, that was if you wanted to show a dog, that was it. You either did confirmation or you did competition obedience. It was even just before agility was becoming popular in the United States. And so the nerves of that, and it would be, well, why did my dog do it so well in training and I get in the ring and they can't do it? It's like, well, there's a clear reason they can't do it. But people would get very upset with their dogs because they didn't do in the ring in competition what they could do in a training setting. And so I think a lot of that is human nerves. And the dogs feel that, and they feel like something dangerous is happening. Why are you so worried? If I was walking along the street with somebody and all of a sudden they got really nervous and tense and started breathing strangely, I would and got like stiff in their movements, I would be concerned too. I would be like, what's wrong? There's something going on. Is there a bear somewhere? What's happening here?
Exactly,
So
exactly.
I think our dogs pick up on that so much.
Yeah. Well, we have a program called a therapy dog program called Canines Teach Compassion, where we take the therapy dogs into the high schools, and we have to teach the kids to watch those signals, because sometimes the dog wants to snuggle and cuddle, and sometimes the dog doesn't want to snuggle and cuddle. Yeah. So what are some of the things that you would advise, let's say, our high school students to be more attending to in body language or behavior?
Yeah, I think people have this idea that somehow all dogs will react in the same way and that all dogs like them.
Right.
Maybe
Right.
they, maybe they do, maybe they don't. And again, on any given day, maybe they're just not wanting that sort of interaction. But I say, stop. Don't
Yeah.
like go into an animal space
Right.
until you've observed them first. Stop, take a look at the animal, invite them into your space instead of like pushing to get closer to them. We're very handsy as humans. We
Yes.
are all about putting our hands on things all the time. And
Yeah.
dogs are one of those we really want to touch. I
Yeah.
really want to get up close. We want to touch them. We want to hug them. And for some dogs, that's great. But for other dogs, that is not so good. So,
Yes.
the stiffening, I think just the stiffness of a dog as opposed to the looseness of their muscles. But being able to see that's a minute thing. And
Yes,
if you
yes.
don't know that dog, you don't know what's normal for them. So I think there's a lot of there should be by the handlers a lot of gatekeeping of maybe explain
Right.
this. Oh, he's turning his head away. That means he's not real comfortable right now. So why don't you sit on the floor over here and then we'll walk by or whatever the case might be. So I think a lot of our job as trainers is to protect our
Yeah.
dog's emotional responses and to explain to other people that that's what it is. And that doesn't mean the dog doesn't like them because people get their feelings hurt.
Yeah,
They feel like
exactly.
if a dog, we're used to golden retrievers who want to be everybody's face and love you all the time, and they're so happy. And then we come up on dogs that are not like that. And then that word that makes people uncomfortable because they feel like all dogs should be the happy, friendly dog, mythical dog that they have in their mind somewhere. But just explaining that this is normal for dogs. And to understand that, if they turn their head away, if they put their ears back, if they put their tail down, if they get stiff, those kinds of things tell us that the dog is not really comfortable. So let's back off and let the dog make the overtures instead of us doing it. I think that in itself, and I've always done that with animals, mostly for safety purposes. If you work in exotic animals or non-domestic animals, you don't go in at them like you do a dog.
Right,
You get away
exactly.
with it. You can do it, but it would be
Right.
stupid because you want
Yes.
to watch to see how they're comfortable as you close distance.
Exactly. Yeah. We had, one of our therapy dogs is a very cute King Charles Spaniel, just cute as can be, and normally wants to engage. And he, his person recognized, he came in yesterday and he had come from just being with two toddlers having,
That's
and
exhausting.
yeah, and the dog was didn't want to interact, just like hung by him under his chair. It was a great teaching example because normally we've seen this dog want to engage and want to play, and that he was just had enough with the two toddlers. And
I could see that. You need a nap now. It's like we push too much onto them. You're going to get reactions you don't want. So we have to watch their stress levels. And that's something I always thought when I did a little bit of therapy dog work way back when, was that we're putting a lot on the dogs here. We're expecting a lot. And only certain kinds of dogs, only certain dogs are
Yes,
really good at it. And
absolutely.
can consistently do it. So even though we might want to as a human, it's like, does the dog really want to? Is this
Right.
something they come out of feeling better than when they went in? And for some dogs, the answer is yes. And then it's like, oh yeah, do it. But if it's not,
Yeah, we had one greyhound, older greyhound, rescue greyhound, and she was amazing for 20 minutes. I mean, she would just look at you and you would melt and she would stare into your eyes with this love. 20 minutes later, she was done. And I just said to her handler, "That's okay, 20 minutes and you go home."
Exactly. Well, I have a social time limit too. I can only be at a party for so long and then I have to leave. So we should understand that that is also true of many other animals, that we have to kind of respect their some of them are more sociable, some of them are more introverted, you know, and yes, you can work on it. You can work on socializing them, but you can't change their basic nature. Right. We have to just respect it. And we shouldn't push them into situations where that discomfort is going to happen over and over again. Mm-hmm. That sometimes we make a choice, not based on what we want, but based on what's best for that animal. Right. And that might not, like I said, that might not be at all the choice that we want to make. I have my youngest dog now is an Australian Coolie named Wizard. Mm-hmm. And Wizard is not as comfortable in public as I would like him to be. Mm-hmm. I would like him, he likes people. Mm-hmm. He's not at all crazy about other dogs. Oh, and okay. He gets very nervous out in public mm-hmm. if there are going to be a lot of other dogs around. And so I'm like, how much does he really need to be in these situations? Mm-hmm. How can I meet his needs and keep him comfortable? And I've determined he's a dog who likes predictability and structure much more than he likes adventure and spontaneity. So I have had to change what I wanted to do with him and what I thought our relationship would be so that he would be more comfortable on a day-to-day basis. So it's not always, like I said, I want him to go out in the world with me and I want him to go hiking. I want him to do a lot of things. And he's like, no, the sofa's good. And my house with dogs I know and people, that's good. Don't ask any more of me. So sometimes we just have to accept that.
Right, exactly. Now, it's only, 10 or 15% of dogs that I meet that are really destined to be therapy dogs that really thrive in that environment. But even with those dogs, they, 45 minutes to an hour once or twice a week, that's about it.
Yeah, we really need to think about and protect that.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, we're going to take a short little break. When we come back, I want to hear a story. I know you have a story about Saber. And about how you were able to give choice to Saber. So we'll be back in just a moment.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Hey, friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Human-Animal Connection. I'm Jeannie Joseph, the Executive Director of the Human-Animal Connection, and I'm speaking with Deborah Jones, and she is a PhD and a full-time animal trainer working with positive choices, helping dogs make choices and be considerate of the feelings that they have. So tell us a story about Saber.
Okay, yeah, the Saber story, that's sort of a pivotal moment in my career as a trainer. I mentioned earlier about, there only being competition obedience if you wanted to train and show a dog. And then agility came along and agility got big. And so I got involved with that and really, really enjoyed doing agility. Somebody contacted me about doing some private lessons because she was having trouble with her Sheltie named Saber in agility. Mm-hmm. And the problem was Saber would not do the dog walk. He would balk, stop, okay? And he loved doing agility. It was clear he really enjoyed everything but the dog walk. Mm. And so every time they'd get to that point, there was all this pressure that was building up. She was worried because she didn't think he was going to do it. And like one out of every 10 times, he'd just do it. Mm-hmm. But then a lot of times he wouldn't. And then they would have this kind of disconnect in the ring and they wouldn't be able to get their teamwork back.
Yeah.
And so... as an outside observer, I was able to to kind of think through this a little bit, because when it's you, it's very emotional. And it's like, why doesn't my dog want to work with me? But when you're an outside observer, you can be a little more objective. And I said, the thing with Saber was that that pressure was so much at that moment that he just folded. He couldn't do it. And he wanted, he seemed to really want to do it, because he'd have like these false tries where he'd almost start and then he'd stop and then he'd second guess himself, and he was clearly losing confidence very, very quickly. And so my suggestion, and she did take it, was don't do the dog walk. Run past it with him. Don't ask him to do it. And of course, this meant a lot of entry fees were lost, because you don't do the dog walk, you can't qualify. And so that's a little bit of a problem. But it was just like, there was so much pressure there. And he felt like he had no choice, yet he couldn't do it. And it was sort of poisoning everything else in their training relationship. It was getting worse instead of better. So she did that. And people were like, why are you doing that? They questioned her, they would question me. And I just had faith. I kept saying, if we give him options, he's going to gain his confidence back, and things are going to get better. And and they did. So eventually, all of a sudden, they run by, instead of running by the dog walk with her, he took it. Okay. And he's like, cool. He was like, what? And then it was just like, she, by taking off that pressure to perform, he actually was like, well, oh, I can do this. No big deal. But the more she pushed at it and the harder she tried, the worse it got. And so that to me was like, giving him the choice made all the difference. Yes. And every trainer thought that this will never work. They're just, she's wasting her money. She shouldn't even be listening to what I'm telling her, because clearly this is very bad advice. But it worked out, and it actually kind of started me down this little bit of a different path in training, because I could see, and not only that, but like Saber's confidence grew. He was one of the fastest dogs out there, and it was kind of amazing. And that the only thing holding him back was he wouldn't do the dog walk. And once he would, once he was like, oh, nothing, piece of cake, got this, then he was an amazing agility dog after that.
That's fantastic. It's such a fundamental respect for the dog's emotions. It's like, you're not wrong for having this feeling. You don't want to do the dog walk. You're okay. You know,
it's like almost like you imagine running up to the edge of a pool or the edge of a cliff to jump into a body of water, and you just go, oh no, I can't do that. But if somebody keeps going, go, 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 do it, you can do it. And the more they try, the more you resist.
Yes.
And the more worried you get. But if they say, okay, we'll just run up to the edge and stop, and we'll just run up. And then one day you just go, you know what? Got it. And then once you do it, you go, I knew I could do that. And so I think it's nice to be able to give them those kinds of choices. And we can
do that. Awesome. Yeah. It's such a beautiful new way, not new to us, but new for, you know, the old way of thinking.
Oh yeah.
That we can, that their response is valid. If it's a no, it's good. You know what I mean?
A no is the information. I always say it's information, and it tells us that we need to change something we're doing. So I want my dog to tell me where we're having problems, or where they're having problems. Because if they don't tell me, how do I know?
Right.
But this was, you know, from a lot of old school thinking that once I tell that dog to do something, they darn well better do it. And there's no question about that. And that was not going to work with Saber. He was like, he just couldn't do it. And pushing him didn't make it better. So sometimes letting go and giving them plenty of choice. That's the thing, I think, that, and then they go, oh, I can do.
That's great. Wonderful. And what about Star? Tell us the story of Star.
Star, my baby. Star was my border collie. I just lost her not quite a year ago. So I'm still missing her a lot. Yeah. Star was probably the smartest dog I've ever had, seen, known, trained. She's brilliant. She's kind of scary smart. And when she was about a year old, she had a bad visit at a vet.
Oh.
And that was it for her. She's like, nope, nobody's ever touching me again. And in fact, you can touch me, but only in certain places. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is a problem.
Yeah.
It's going to be a big issue. She was truly traumatized. And she didn't want people restraining her in particular and holding her in particular ways, and touching her legs and feet was a complete no. I'm like, but we, you know, I've never had this problem. And I never really, we never thought about the problem of a dog that won't let you handle them a whole lot because I just did. And my dogs all sort of just went along with it. They might not have liked it, but they did it. And Star was like, no, this is not happening. And I could see that pushing her was making her defensive and was to make her reactive. And she would bite just because she was so stressed about everything. So I had to go way, way, way back, like to ground zero with her and decide, how am I going to get around this? Because I can't just not do it. We can't not do physical care for her when she needs it. She needs vet visits. She needs grooming. And she wasn't really cooperating with anything when we got started here. So I had to go back and start to develop some ideas about how to change how she felt about it. And I knew that going for classical conditioning, you're changing the emotional response, was what I needed to do. And so I had a lot of work that I did there over many, many years. And even up until the end, where she was much better, but I still had to maintain all of that all of this time. So I started working and trying to figure out different techniques and different approaches to get her comfortable with being physically handled and touched. Because I knew that it was going to have to happen. And in fact, at one point, she ate a corn cob, and we had two surgeries and all. And she was at emergency vets overnight. And I was so thankful I had done all this work. This was when she was 10 years old. And the problem started when she was a year. So I was thankful I had done all that work all those years, because it made it better. It was, you know, it's like she's already, bad things are happening. At least the stress of other people handling her isn't adding on to that at this point in time. It was bad enough. You know, and she was sick enough already. So this, the point of the Star story to me is that she actually started me down a totally different path with training into the idea of cooperative care, of how can I get my dog to cooperate with what I want to do, even when that's uncomfortable for them or it's concerning or stressful for them. So how can I make it all better, at least tolerable? And sometimes tolerance is the best we can hope for on some things. It's like I tolerate the dentist. So I don't really enjoy it, but I cooperate. I do what they tell me. And so I want the same things for my dogs. And when I started working in this area and talking about it, all of a sudden I've got all sorts of people who, well, I can't put drops in my dog's ear, or I can't do my dog's nails. That's the big one. I can't do my dog's nails. Or, you know, my dog needs this medication and they won't take it. And it's sort of just then ballooned into this whole area that I started to work on. It's like, how can we get our dogs comfortable with all these things? And so then I went down that path because of Star. And I'm still very, very deep into that area of work now. And it's something to me that it really can improve their lives. And we give them, I give them choice. I mentioned, you know, they can always leave a session. They can always leave a session when I'm working on this in cooperative care. And that tells me right away, if my dog has to leave, I'm pushing too hard. I need to back off. I need to make things easier, shorter sessions, more fun, better reinforced, whatever it takes. I need to do something differently. Or I need to just not, you know, I need to back up the whole process. Like, instead of touching a dog's leg, I need to just hold up my hand and work with that. So I started kind of developing a lot of techniques for how I would go about installing kind of the fundamentals of cooperative care. And I've worked through a whole program of that now, which has probably taken me, you know, when I think about it, 10 years altogether to really put together a comprehensive program of how I do that. And as much as possible, the dog gets choice at every step of the way. That kind of, I think, leads us into the, well, what happens when choice isn't possible question. And that's a big one, because almost everybody asks me that. Well, you know, now my dog has to go to the vet, or they have to have surgery, or they have stitches, or, you know, I have to wrap something, or they have to take this medication today. Sometimes we do not have options. And so for me, I want it to be clear to the dog if it's a non-optional event.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to ask your permission. I'm not going to ask for consent. I'm not going to pretend you have a choice. Mm-hmm. There will be times when we have to restrain you and do something to you.
Yes.
But I, at the same time as I'm doing everything else, I'm working on handling and restraint. Mm-hmm. And I'm working on teaching my dog the basic concept that people do all kinds of weird stuff to your body.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's like they're just weird. It's strange. Yeah. Why are you sticking your finger in my mouth? I don't know. But uh-huh. Hey, there's a cookie afterwards. Or uh-huh. Why are you putting something in my eye, which is very unpleasant? Oh, I don't know. But okay, they do it. And then I get a bunch of cookies and we're all okay. And we move on with life.
Right.
So I'm teaching them that these things are all okay. But sometimes they're not ready and we still have to do it.
Yes.
So when that's the case, when there is no choice, I don't pretend there is.
Okay.
They don't, you know, it's a whole different situation. I don't work in my usual training area. I don't give them the option of leaving. And I actually don't even use cookies when something is going to be possibly unpleasant. And I'm just going to do it anyway,
okay.
Because that can poison the cookies. And now they become suspicious because mm-hmm. the cookies are connected with the event that was unpleasant. So those are situations in real life that happen, and we have to learn to work around them. Just like we don't always have choices of the
right.
things that we do.
Yes.
But that's not an excuse for not training.
Yes.
When that's you wonderful. Do have, you know, when you're away from that situation and you have other options, you can't always say, well, I had to do it because there was no choice. If you say that repeatedly, I'm going to say, well, you're just not even working on it, because if you were, then these things would become more voluntary and consensual, and your dog would be, okay, I'm used to this. I know what to do here. You're going to put eye drops in or ear drops in, let's say. You're going to clean my ears. I'm going to put my head on a pillow in your lap. Dog's going to hold their head there. I'm going to do the thing to the ears, and then we get our reinforcer and we're done. But I need to work on that away from the time when my dog has an ear infection. I can't work on it when it's, you know, there's pain involved and there's stress involved. That's not the time they're going to learn anything I want. They're only going to learn things I don't want in those cases.
Right.
So yeah, I try to clarify for them that this is almost always you get an option, but when you don't, we try to be neutral. We try to get it done as fast as we can, but this has to happen. And that happens at the vet. That happens at the emergency vet, whether we want it to or not. I've had enough animals with emergencies to know somebody grabs you and carries you in the back. I want my animal thinking, look, just one of those things. It happens. I don't want them thinking, well, I get a choice here and you can't do this to me. No, let's help make them tolerant. Let's help make them pliant about these things.
Great. Wonderful. Well, this is great work you're doing. How can people get in touch with you? How can they find out more about your work?
The best way would be through my website. It's K9, the letter K, the number 9, InFocus, InFocus.com. So K9InFocus.com. I write blog posts regularly. So if you look on my website, which I'm just getting redone, so it's all getting shiny and pretty. But if you look there will be a place where you will see blog. And you can look at the blog posts and subscribe to it, the email list. And then whenever I'm doing anything, I usually talk about it there. I do lots of online classes, webinars, workshops. I'm in the middle of developing a cooperative care trainer certificate program.
Oh,
so
lovely.
Hopefully that's going to be up maybe this summer. That's going to actually be done. That's a big project.
Sure.
But it's a fun one too. So I'm always working on something. I'm since I retired from academics, it's like I work more now.
Right. Right.
But it's all stuff I enjoy. Who doesn't love to work on dog stuff? So
that's wonderful. Yeah. Well, thank you for helping people to find how to give more choice into the lives of the animals who share their lives with us. Thank you, Deb.
Thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed.
Good. We'll talk to you soon. Well, thank you so much for being a part of the Human Animal Connection podcast. We'll see you in the next episode. Bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to the Human Animal Connection Show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.